Wake up, everybody. It's You Get the Blessing with Bob Belts, one of the most brilliant men alive. Yeah. And I'm Bo Mitchell, one of the strangest human beings you've ever met in your life.
One of my most delusional best friend.
True. And what we try to do is make you happy. Rock and roll. And we bless you by introducing you to some wonderful people who are impacting the world for Christ. So today our guest is Carol Horney. Carol, welcome.
Thank you. It is a pleasure to be here.
Carol's with Adams Camp, but we go back further than that, even though I didn't know it at the time when we were back there. But
That's right. You knew
my brother-in-law and my wife at South High School.
Yes, I do. I can picture their house right off of Bonnie Bray.
I can, too.
Can you?
I didn't know them all then. I met my wife, Gary, when we were seniors in college.
Oh, but, really?
Yeah. But you can remember Gary, and you can picture these people at South.
I certainly can. I believe she was a fellow cheerleader, actually.
Do you remember, so then you can picture how I met her, and 3 weeks later proposed to her, and 7 months later got married, and now I've been married 40 years.
It's incredible.
Not just looks. She's a really amazing, wonderful person.
She is that.
I hated South, by the way. I went to TJ.
Well, of course you did.
Did you
and
hate
the feeling
us?
Was mutual.
So were you always like big personality, beautiful like you are now?
Well, that's very kind of you to say. And since we're on radio, you can say
it's
anything
true.
You want to, I guess.
Well, they have no conceivable idea of how handsome we are either. So,
well, that's
you know,
true.
Just...
it would be way too detracting from the message if they could.
That's why
see
we're on radio and not television.
Yeah. So. The big personality part, yes, I would have to say I've always been a big personality. In fact, I was looking at my old report cards the other day because I was going through an old trunk, and one of my elementary school teachers said,
"Talks too much."
Well, I got that a lot, but this one was something to do with not really being all that enthused about authority.
Oh.
Ah. The old authority check.
Yes. Yes. So, yes. Big personality.
Well, we want to dig into your life just a little bit beyond just your good looks, your personality, your cheerleading, and your South High School. So tell us a little about your past as our listeners get to know you before we lead up to Adams Camp and the great things you're doing now. What were some of the highlights of your life growing up?
Well, the highlights of my life, really, ironically, high school was a highlight of my life. I loved high school. High school was a place for me to kind of escape into a different world because I grew up in an alcoholic home. My father was an alcoholic who died when I was 15 from alcoholism. He also had diabetes. And, you know, in those days, we lived in very little tiny houses. And everything that went on, we were all privy to. I have memories and things that happened to me during those times that made home not a safe place for me.
Now, was your dad a mean drunk?
He was not. He was passive.
Yeah, mine was just total sweetheart, funny, and occasionally got a little rough.
Yeah, yeah. But the problem is he was absent, and that was really difficult for us all. I know that he loved me, and I feel so blessed that I knew my family loved me. But my poor mom was a typical untreated Al-Anon, and, you know, just it was sort of a lot of fighting and so on and so forth. So, of course, with my strong personality, I decided I was never going to be that way. You know, that was not going to be my experience.
You're going the other direction.
That is absolutely right. And, you know, this is just not going to be part of my experience. And so I went on, and the way that I dealt with it was wherever I was in my life outside of my home, I was always striving to be the top dog. And it really wasn't about accomplishment. It was about attention and about being sure that I was noticed. And I was successful at doing that all the way through high school. When I got to college.
So I'm not the first person to say you're attractive with a big personality.
Well, no, but.
It's embarrassing for you. I'm not going to say that.
Yeah, a little bit. But as I said, it's.
You know,
subjective.
Bo. Always likes to remember and reflect upon the fact that he was a big personality. Of course, in those days, they said, he likes to say, in those days they called me obnoxious. Now they say I'm charismatic. So you know, there's a, you know, there's something well, about this yes, growing up thing. So.
We all have to utilize our character defects for the betterment of ourselves.
This pitching coach we have for the Rockies, a great guy named Bob Apodaca. He and I played baseball together in the summer of 1970 after our junior years in college. And so we've reconnected now that he's in Denver as our pitching coach. And I said, you know, I just remember about you, Bob, you were an incredibly wonderful person. What do you remember about me? And he says, very funny, a little strange, and always up to something.
I remember his name.
Apodaca.
Was he ever involved in high school sports?
Yeah, he was great, but not here.
He
but,
was when he went to high school. I've heard.
He's joking. Don't listen to him. Never mind. Strange. Okay, so did you do, I mean, so you went away from alcohol or how did that work for you?
Well, no, I dove right into it. Mm. When I got to college, I really wasn't the top dog anymore. And I remember college being a very lonely time for me because all of my, you know, self-worth was based on whatever you thought about me, which is not an uncommon story. And I really, really did have a big, as many people describe, I had an emptiness within myself that I couldn't figure out how to fill. And so I immediately turned to alcohol. My motto became anything worth doing is worth doing in excess. Mm. And so I drank, I smoked, I really didn't do drugs, but.
Sounds like you went to CU. I did.
Oh no, I went to UNC. We probably didn't keep quite up with you guys, but we were in the hunt. And
yeah, the drugs wouldn't have been optional at CU. See, so
yeah, that's right.
It's better she went to UNC.
I ended up getting married when I was in college because I didn't win the election for the president of the sorority. So I thought, well, I guess I'll get married then. And so I did.
Seems like a viable option.
I know, because you really have to do something. And
I've got some time on my hands now.
Yes,
what should
I think.
Let's get married.
Yes, no. Get married. So I married someone who also probably was an alcoholic. Mm. I won't say that for him because you have to decide that for yourself. But that didn't last. In the meantime, I did graduate from college. I got a degree in teaching, and I started teaching second grade.
Still drinking.
Oh, yeah. And ironically, the school, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on Friday, I mean, it wasn't – school teachers can party. So it was very – I found the people that wanted to share my lifestyle. And during that same time, when I was a child, my drug of choice, if you will, was food. You know, anything happy in our family was around food. So I was quite heavy as a child. Then I lost the weight. Well, again, I struggled with my weight in college, and my solution to that was to become anorexic. So
did
eating
they
disorders
even have the word anorexic?
They did not, which was very confusing to me because I would go to the doctor and tell him what I was up to, and he didn't have any answer for that.
So food disorders weren't quite out there.
They were not. I blazed the trail for that as well. And
but you were getting noticed.
So I was getting – well, no, actually I wasn't. What happened was I ended up meeting my current husband. And as we like to say, over a white picket fence, he lived next door to my mother. And so we got married and we moved to Connecticut because he had gotten a job offer there. Well, I'd never been out of Colorado or away from my support system. And that was when my eating disorder really took off. So when I came home and my alcoholism and everything else that I was using to keep myself from feeling any loneliness, because you know, in an alcoholic home, don't feel, don't think, don't. There's another one. But whatever it is, I didn't do that either. And so my, you know, I was not in any way willing to acknowledge the way I was feeling about my life at that time.
Hang on just a second. So, Bob, what is it about human nature that causes us to just search like Carol was searching for something to fill this vacuum up, and we just search far and wide for what? Meaning, truth, What is that?
I absolutely think God hardwired us that way. And, you know, the famous quote by Blaise Pascal is that in every man there's a God-shaped vacuum. And I think that's just a great image, because I do think that, you know, that God has placed within us a longing and a need to have a relationship with himself. And, you know, when that isn't met, you know, really through a relationship with Christ, you know, we've got to figure something out to try and, you know, fill that emptiness. So I think what Carol has experienced, you know, in her own life is a great illustration of that fact, that all of us, you know, have that kind of a need and a, you know, sense of something's wrong here, and what am I going to try and fill it with? So
you may be listening today and feel all this, mm-hmm. and you're listening to Carol talk about her story, and we're getting to the point of why this program is on the air every week, and why Bob and I spend a portion of our lives just saying, you know, it's not about us, we're nothing special, but there's a truth here in the scripture that can get you on a path that will give your life purpose and meaning. So did that happen for you there shortly after the food disorders and the alcoholism, and now you're married again and you moved to Connecticut, and
it got worse.
Got worse. What next? Wait a minute. You became addicted to sugar.
No.
Oh, that's a given. I'm a woman.
Maybe that's my
problem. But no, the height of my eating disorder particularly was in when we were in when we lived in Connecticut. And for those who haven't experienced food disorders, it is such a prison because of the fact that you have to eat. You know, you can't not eat. Looking back on that time of my life, I was so imprisoned. I was so not free, because I was so ruled by my addictions. And what I would do is I would pretty much starve myself all week long, and then on the weekends I would drink and binge. And that's what I would do all weekend, and then I'd start it. And that pattern lasted for the whole time we were there. The only thing that helped me realize what was happening to me is we came home for my South High School 10-year reunion, and a friend of mine came up to me in absolute horror and said, "What is wrong with you?" She thought I had cancer. Because I was probably 30 pounds lighter than I am now. So it was not good. And then I went back home, I gained a little bit of weight, and that's when the story of Adam's Camp begins. Again, I was still very much, you know, God had not played a part in this part of my life, although I was raised in the church. And I had become agnostic, and my main focus was control. I had to control the way I felt. I had to control my life. Very typical addictive behavior. So we ended up moving back to Colorado. And when we were married in 1975, we decided right away that we wanted children, because we were old, 27. And so we started to try to conceive. Well, I was so thin, there was no way that I could possibly conceive. So I started having fertility treatments. Well, when we moved back to Colorado, finally, after 5 years of trying, I finally got pregnant. And I did quit drinking while I was pregnant. But during that pregnancy, you know, I guess I would have to say Adam was one of the catalysts that brought me back to my faith, because of the things that happened around his birth. At 12 weeks, I went into I started spotting. I went in for an ultrasound and found out that I was pregnant with triplets. Ooh. And we were absolutely beside ourselves excited, thinking instant family. This is awesome. We're so excited. And we went on, and I went into premature labor, and we started setting up the rooms. You know, we got the three little bedrooms across the hall, and I'm at all the tag sales buying all the furniture. I mean, this is a dream come true for us.
And you better get ready for it. So you're getting ready.
I'm getting ready. Here they come, boy. And I'm set. So at 20 weeks, I went into premature labor. So I went into got the premature labor stop, but I went on to bed rest. I was on bed rest for 8 weeks, and at 28 weeks pregnant, I went into premature labor again, and this time I went into the hospital. There was no stopping this delivery. So I was taken over to University Hospital, where to an audience of about 30 interns, I gave birth to these three babies. The first one out was Jared. He weighed 2 pounds, 6 ounces. He had a good, healthy cry. Then came Adam at 2 pounds, 8 ounces. He had a good, healthy cry. And last out came my little girl, Greg, 2 pounds, 12 ounces. It didn't work out exactly like we planned it. Three boys. But just, we were excited. And off we went into the intensive care nursery to take a look at these little guys and begin our life together. And it was at that point that we really understood what we were facing, because these little guys were hooked up to everything you could possibly imagine. And this storybook, this story that we were creating for ourselves, suddenly had some kinks in it. This was not in my controlled plan. You know, we were not sure what was coming next. And the doctors were making it very clear that this was not going to be an easy road. The main things that were concerns were hyaline membrane disease, which is underdeveloped lungs, and the other is cerebral hemorrhage.
Our son Andy almost died of hyaline membrane.
Did he?
And the doctor that delivered Andy said, let's see, he was born in 74, said he personally, in his practice, had lost, I think he said, 10 kids, 10 babies just in the year before
is the hyaline that membrane. Right? Was he premature?
Maybe a couple of weeks, but not like what you did.
Interesting. We went day to day to day, just not knowing what to expect. And every day something different would arise with the kids. Adam, it looked like it had a pretty severe hemorrhage, probably a grade 4, which is the most severe cerebral hemorrhage. Greg, it turned out, was really struggling with his lungs. And so we were making decisions. At day 9, I'm sorry, I'm really rushing this along, at day 9, which was actually our wedding anniversary, they called us in the middle of the night and said, you know, Greg is really struggling, and we think that you need to come in and make a decision about whether to take him off of life support or not. So we went to the hospital, and we made that decision to take him off of life support, and, you know, we held him for the last time. And became so crystal clear about the fragility of life, how precious it is, how much we take for granted about development and all the things that are important to have a really healthy whole baby. At that point, Adam was really developing a lot of fluid in his brain, and he was developing hydrocephalus. So they needed to put a shunt in to relieve that pressure in his brain. So Jared and Adam and I and Bob all went over to Children's Hospital, where Adam got a shunt, which saved his life. And the shunt had actually only been around for about 10 years, so we were very fortunate to have that. We then went over to St. Luke's, which was the medium care nursery in those days. And after 2 months, Jared came home with no real identified issues. After 3 months, Adam came home. We went into the doctor's. I remember the little room that we went into to talk to the doctor before we left. And he said, you know, Adam has cerebral palsy. He says he may never walk. He may never talk. Or you may barely be able to tell. So good luck. So we left absolutely deer in the headlights. Not knowing what to do, we went to his pediatrician. The pediatrician told us what to do. He said, get therapy for this child as much as you can get to help him, you know, to recognize whatever abilities he has. So we went to Children's Hospital, and then we started seeing independent therapists. We saw a speech therapist, an occupational therapist, and a physical therapist. And after he saw those therapists, he became 5 years old, and at 5, he was supposed to go into a pre-kindergarten program, but he was not walking, and he wasn't crawling. He was scooting around on his elbows. So we were desperate to get him up and moving. So we went to a therapist that we'd heard about who did intensive therapy. And she worked with him for 5 hours a day for 5 consecutive days. And at the end of that time, he was able to take some steps in a walker. And then he was able to go to school in a walker, and he maintained that progress, and he didn't have to to be in a wheelchair, and we were so excited about that. So we started talking with his physical therapist about this and then about some of our other needs, like the fact that we had many therapists and they didn't really communicate with each other. They were great therapists, but we were getting kind of conflicting information. We were feeling overwhelmed. We didn't know what to do to really help Adam in the best way possible and still let him be a kid and a brother and a son and all those other things. So we talked about the idea of bringing some families together and maybe going somewhere where we could get some respite and having intensive therapy for some kids. But instead of just using one therapy, get them all together. Get all the therapists together, let them work with our kids for a week, and then come up with a plan that makes sense for our children. So we took five people up to Snow Mountain Ranch, which is where we have our programs today. And after about 3 days of intensive therapy, Adam was watching Lisa, who had cerebral palsy and was already walking, and he just got up and walked across the room to her, and he walked independent ever since that day.
So Adam's camp was born.
Adam's camp was born. And, you know, every year since then, we've just kind of gone back and we've responded to whatever people have needed and added programs. And, you know, all of those things were going on. But so was my alcoholism.
Because you're going to have to give me short answers now. I'm going to interrupt.
All right.
So where are you today on faith?
I wish that I could explain to you what God is in my life today. You know, when I started into recovery, I put God behind me and kind of called on him, and then I put him beside me, and then today he is absolutely in front of me.
So where are you on food disorder and alcoholism?
I'm relieved of the compulsion.
And where are you on these boys?
Adam just moved into his own apartment. So exciting. Adam's camp is alive and well. We just celebrated 25 years. We served about 850 clients last year. Altogether, we've served about 9,000.
Wow. And I'm sorry, Jared?
Jared's living in San Francisco. He's living the dream, having a great time. Great.
So you didn't get your little girl, and you had to part company with Greg when he was how old?
9 days.
9 days?
Mm-hmm.
And out of your pain comes this blessing of ministry to how many families did you just say?
Well, over 9,000 clients, which includes, because we have programs for adults, the family and the siblings as well. So,
does Adam come back and participate in all that?
Not so much now. His deal is to promote Adam's camp. He's more on the backside, kind of like I am. And he's a very, very much a proponent. His latest thing is he's working with WizKids as a tutor.
Oh, yeah, cool. So I'm sorry to make you give these short answers, but your story is amazing. It's encouraging to you listeners to hear how Carol and her husband, Bob, have taken that pain and turned it into this ministry blessing. We do some ministry together now that's very amazing through Mark and Pam Clibby, making sure we're connected. But tell us and our listeners, how can people get in touch with you, and how can they best help Adam's Camp and what you guys do?
We really encourage anyone to look at our website, which is www.adamscamp.org. Our desire is to make sure that everybody in Colorado knows about Adam's Camp. It may not be the right program for everybody, but we hear so many times with our campers that come later on, oh, I wish I'd known about this, because we serve kids from one to an undetermined age because we don't know how to say no, so we just keep adding programs for adults and all kinds of things. But and, of course, always can use help financially and with volunteers. And, we'd love to have anybody inquire that would like to become involved with us.
So give the website again.
www.adamscamp.org.
And money would do what for you?
It would allow us to subsidize families. We already subsidize 50% of every family that comes, and we give $55,000 in scholarships over and above that. The economy is challenging, but our families have also are losing services that they've often gotten in the past. So to be able to offer this hope to our families is what we desire to continue to do.
So picture everybody, you're going along with your life, you're excited, you're getting the nursery ready, you have a baby, and all of a sudden you're a caregiver 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, mm-hmm. and everything changes, and you never get a minute off. And then a couple comes along like Carol and Bob, and they say, look, here's an alternative. Come here and experience some joy and some love and off the clock for a little while, which is what we try to do with Nick's Picks. But it's hard to explain to somebody that might just write you a check how painful that is to have to just forfeit your whole life like you have. But in your case, it got you off of a couple things that were destroying you, didn't it?
Well, and as it turns out, Adam's the biggest blessing that's ever happened to us. So
well, we're you're
grateful.
A blessing too, and everybody's blessed hearing your story. So Adam's Camp, y'all. What do you think, Bob?
Great stuff. And again, on the website, they can actually donate. Is there like a good adamscamp.org? Great. Thanks for being with us, Carol.
It was a pleasure. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Go Rebels.
Go Rebels. Sorry, I know you were hoping for Go Spartans, but
okay. Thanks for listening, folks. We'll see you next week right here on You Get the Blessing.